Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'at-Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and you are in tune to a special edition of New Day, and we say, Haboy Ghani. And, of course, the response, the answer to Haboy Ghani is Yomoja. Yes, this is the first day of Kwanzaa. And so for those of you who are just starting to learn more about Kwanzaa, check this out.
KwanzaaMedia.com. What in the world is Kwanzaa?
Basically, Kwanzaa is a holiday that salutes and recognizes the cultural of people of African descent.
Now, what does the word Kwanzaa mean?
Kwanzaa means the first fruit of the harvest in the language of Kiswahili, which is spoken in certain parts of Africa.
When do you celebrate Kwanzaa?
Kwanzaa is celebrated from December 26th to January 31st.
Well, where does Kwanzaa come from?
The root of Kwanzaa comes from certain African harvest celebrations. In 1966, Dr. Milana Karanga developed Kwanzaa from the perspective of Africans in America and all around the world.
Is Kwanzaa a religious celebration?
Kwanzaa is not religious or political. It's cultural.
What I want to know is, can you give gifts on Kwanzaa?
Yeah, you can give gifts during Kwanzaa. The point is, don't go broke doing it. The gifts focus on why you should be something practical and meaningful, like a book or something that you or another African has made.
Okay, I get it. Kwanzaa is just a black version of Christmas, right?
No. Kwanzaa has nothing to do with Christmas. It has meaning to us as a people. It's more like a cultural reaffirmation.
So, what is Kwanzaa based on?
Ngubu's father.
The Ngubu's father?
Yes, that's his family for the 7 years ago.
All right. Did you get that? Again, for those who are just beginning to get acquainted with Kwanzaa, hopefully that helped you out a little bit. And, of course, today is what is known as Imani. I'm sorry. I'm way ahead. And you all have to forgive me because I'm also on kind of a cloud. As I was talking with all of you last night, I was also preparing to go to the hospital because as we were all talking and dialoguing, I had received a text and a call that my daughter went into labor. So during our broadcast last night, I was literally, you know, trying to find her bag and that she had packed and try to get myself ready and all of that. You all didn't know that, but that was, in fact, what was happening. And this morning at 6:20, I think it was, Journey was born. My granddaughter, Journey, was born this morning at 6:20 on the day of Umoja, of unity. Wow. Can you imagine? I mean, so forgive me if I'm kind of a little stumbling a little bit, but this has been a real kind of interesting day. I hadn't had a lot of sleep, and, you know, I'm just working right now off of the ethers of just, you know, having my daughter to be now a mommy, a mother. And it's very interesting. But anyway, I wanted to share that all with you tonight. And again, welcome to this segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. And it is the day of Umoja, the day of unity. And so tonight what we're going to do is have an open mic, and we're going to have you all to talk to us about what it is you think we should now do as a people to generate, to embrace, to make happen more unity, more umoja, what is it that we need to do? What is it that we can do? What is it that we need to increase or decrease or whatever you care to call it? We'd like to hear from you. So with that said, before we begin tonight's program, we're going to give thanks and praises to our Creator. And we are certainly always very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Again, this is going to be an open mic. And throughout tonight, we're not going to do our full 2 hours because, as you can imagine, I really need to catch up on a little bit of rest and some other things. But we are going to play throughout tonight some kind of clips and snippets dealing with Kwanzaa. And more importantly, to focus on the principles, and that's what we really, really want to emphasize, the principles. So let's see. We're going to get ready to go to our live line, and we're going to open up your mics. And we're going to go to caller at 7940. And we'd like to know, what do you think about Kwanzaa, and particularly Umoja? What do we need to do to bring about greater unity amongst us as a people? How can we just really make this happen to a greater extent? Caller, you're at 7940. Your mic is open.
Greetings and congratulations, Empress, to your new arrival of the Kwanzaa baby. And
yes,
I would say that is a symbol to me. And it's a method, and it's a inspiration that made me feel like the Creator used the child to give you a bundle of joy, that you are doing what He like you to do, and by being pleasing to Him, He sent you down your Kwanzaa baby. And I also, because you know the Creator works in mysterious ways, and He always sent us signs and resources and people and power. So that was something identifying to the movement as a signature to who you are. And also, I wanted to say that we must start listening to each other, respect each other, like we do these so-called political people. If Obama's was to come to some of these people home, they'll go all out the way doing these different things. Obama is here. And they would do different things for Obama if he was to make president and say, hey, I'm coming over your house for dinner. So with that said, I mean that we need to have that type of grand finale and a warm welcoming for each other. We should not allow money to make us mistreat each other and come up with this so-called status, class or status classification of some status of how we're going to treat one another. We have to know that we are on the same wavelength, and once we understand these things, we can begin to create a one-unit movement around the planet. It's like making a thorn, a rock, into the water and creating a ripple effect. So those are the things we have to do. We have to go back to the natural self. And I'm going to give you an example. And Sister Gloria shared this information with me about her mother. She said her mother was one of the people that fed all the children in the community. And it wasn't about you go home and eat at your house, your father, your mama making this amount of money, you can't eat here, we're barely making it. She said her mother was the type that was her duty by nature, and she was not hung up on selfishness. She knew the value of family being family-orientated. So that's one of the things that me, myself, my mother, we always had children staying the night. We was always one of those families that took people into our homes where some people was programmed to feel like other people was in their space, but we had this thing where we didn't want people to be out in the cold. And when we, as black original people, African descended, we must understand that we got to look and see how people, other people have made it based upon us being the civil people of civilization. They're using things that we done by nature, and we have lost that. So if we got to look and see some of the things that other we have trained other people, other cultures to do, we got to bring that, captivate that and bring that home. And one of the things is it's a saying that the Mexicans, the Spanish, they were all in other cultures. They were all living in one house. Buy that house and share that house and get a loan. And they will move out and buy another one until everybody have a home. Well, see, we got to get out of that mode where we can't stand to be in the same home and we all need our own space. Sometimes we can't afford our space, but can we help each other and come together with some type of unity? And then last but least, I would say that we have to I remember the time that if the children would act out in the community, the parents had, other parents in the community, African communities, had the respect to discipline those children without one another thinking you abusing a child. And there was no such thing as no CPS where black people depended on calling CPS on one another. They helped each other. Before the police got involved, they got involved. We have lost all these different values, and that's basically I have to say for now. I just wish that, I'm not going to say I wish, I know with people like us, we will captivate these things and be an lead by example to bring this to our people's attention so that they can too fall in line and take their rightful place as well as we know to take our rightful place. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Oh, you're very welcome, sister. And we're going to ask if anyone else, we're going to keep Sister Amy on, but also we want to ask if there is anyone else that would like to comment on what we're talking about tonight. And what we're focusing on tonight is unity. Today is, in fact, the first day of what's known as Kwanzaa, and that is Moja, and that means unity. And the question is, what things can we now do to create greater unity, to make certain that we have the type of unity that really needs to happen today. So if you have a comment or something you'd like to share with us about that, please push one now. And going back to what Sister Amy was saying, you know, all of what you said, my sister, I definitely agree. And I think it gets to how. How are we going to do some of what you suggested? We certainly need to do it. It goes without saying. And you're right on point in saying how, you know, we had some of these things. But you know what? Unfortunately, kind of what went with that, and I think this to me is how some of this began to dissipate or become less. Do you realize that unfortunately some of the glue that kind of kept us stuck together, you know, that as you said, you know, we would do certain things if you was in the community. A parent or a person in the community would do certain kinds of things, certainly more so than today. But do you realize also that we were functioning from a brainwash? And I hate to put it like that, but, I mean, when you analyze it, you begin to see that the programming we were under and that was, you know, placed on us kind of also had us doing, you might would think, or it does seem like, more for and with each other. But remember, the glue or the thing that kind of stuck us together was the mere fact that we were really told a bunch of lies. For example, during that time period that you're talking about, many folks practiced or observed Christmas or Easter or Thanksgiving or, you know, a lot of other things. So as more people become or begin not to do that, it seems, I could be wrong, but it seems like some of the glue began to unravel. It started falling apart. Now, I'm not suggesting that the only reason why we were doing certain things for each other was because of these various notions, holidays, or whatever you want to call it. I'm not suggesting that. But what I am saying is that we, overall, kind of a, when you look at the whole picture, there's certain components that were always in place. And those certain components were brainwashing things. So the reality is, while we had these good things that we were going for, that was going for us and that we were doing for one another, it appears that once we begin to learn truth, for whatever reason, we either forgot or put to the side or just, you know, ignored some of the other things that were really a part of our being. So, you know, I just want to give people something to think about, because you have to look at what happened. Now, I can only, you know, try to give some idea of what possibly has happened, and I just gave you, you know, one of my little scenarios, and it's not to say that that is what happened. I just want people to think about, because we have to dissect some of these things. We have to analyze some of these things. We have to match it up with what was the possibility as to why this happened. It's not to say that is the answer, but we certainly have to break it down, bust it down, weigh it out, and see what we come up with. So with that said, family, what I'm suggesting is, why do you think that now we're not doing certain things that we used to do in our communities, such as what Sister Amy just said, that Sister Gloria talked about with her own mother. And I bear witness to that also. But what happened? This is the question that we have to ask. What happened? Something happened. If all over the country, black folks were, in fact, helping one another, treating one another in a certain kind of way, what happened? Sister Amy, what do you think? Okay. Sister Amy, are you there? All right. Somehow we lost Sister Amy.
I am here. Excuse me.
Okay. Very good.
I don't want to say believe, but I overstand that it had a lot to do with these Caucasians playing us against each other, telling us, putting these drugs out here, having us become addicts, snitching on each other. Then they playing us the Willie Lynch syndrome, playing the same thing they did back in slavery. They playing us against each other. Giving some of us scholarships, we getting these degrees, we going to their universities, getting brainwashed. We come back to our families, some of our families call us an educated fool. When we come back, we want to be higher than our families instead of the way that we live, which was when you go out there and get educated, you bring the education back to the family and teach them some things that they didn't know, so it can enhance what we know. But instead, we took on this Caucasian mentality. From there, with this so-called education they given us, to when they brainwashed our children with this, we have allowed the Caucasians to raise our children in the schools as another form of plantation education for our children. And then we have just stop wanting to recap and say, it used to be a time where the parents would say, tell me what you learned in school today. And they would go over it, and then if there was something we didn't agree with, we reprogrammed our children and told our children like otherwise. And then they make sure that the black parent, a mother, used to be at home with the child, or maybe a father, either or. But you had somebody that was not working so hard and tired and overwhelmed from having to make ends meet, from their raising the economy up. Parents be so tired where they don't do what they used to do, having the strength that the people are former ancestors, even in the time period where it was told to me, and I know it's true, that the black women had to hold down two or three, maybe four jobs, and had a bunch of children, and the older children helped her raise the younger siblings while she'd go out and make the money, and mother was tired, but the children was there for mother, maybe took off her shoes, she was in a chair, and that's a bond. So now it's this new way of living where it has interrupted our way of living based upon we engaging into wanting to be more involved with Caucasian lifestyle. And once that happened, it began to, as a way to demolish our lifestyle, taking on this Western European, Eurocentric lifestyle, and the values change. That's some of the perspective. There are many ways, and as Empress, Sister Empress, no, I will say they have mind-altering technology also to change people's behaviors.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Sister Amy, I think you hit on some very interesting points. But the only thing I would say in doing this assessment is, remember, the Willie Lynch syndrome, the class problem of so-called education, higher education amongst our people. Now, remember, that started really in the 1800s as far as so-called education, okay, in the late 1800s. So my point being, we were talking about how in our community, people were more caring. They were more apt to help one another and so forth and so on. So the question again is what happened, meaning could it really have been those things to be a major factor, given the fact that education or higher so-called higher education or other kinds of things, those things really with the syndrome, they were playing up against each other for the longest. Those were showing us out, you know, once they became politicians, whatever, we're talking about during Reconstruction and all of that. So even during that period, the same things were there, but we were still more helpful to one another. We were still more caring to one another. But the same things you mentioned were, in fact, the same things going on then. So what is it? Okay, there's some noise going on there. We need to take care of that. But what is it that you feel really played the role? Because if, in fact, that was going on even then, why are we now worse? You see, something else had to happen. Now, maybe it was the accumulation of all of that happening, meaning we became to the point of backstabbing each other so much. But remember, again, when you look at the Honorable Marcus Garvey and others, Ida B. Wells, and then bring that even more so into more contemporary times, these people, these great sheroes and heroes, they ran up against the same kind of stuff, meaning Negroes who would go out there and sell them out. So that was there right then, too, and the so-called education or higher education thing was right there also.
You see, there's something else going on here, and I'm just suggesting that we need to really examine what were some of the other things that happened that got us to the point now where, as you're saying, it used to be in our neighborhood, somebody's up in there really took on the responsibility to a greater extent than what you're seeing today for the well-being of the community. What happened? Sister Amy, stay right there. We're going to go to a caller at 9302, and we're going to get another comment or opinion about unity. How can we now have greater unity? What are some of the things that we can do to make certain that we're able to move forward in the future? And because, you know, we talk about unity, but why is it we can't get it to the degree that these other groups have it? I mean, and I know there's a lot of different reasons, the fact that what happened to us didn't happen to them, but I'm saying even still, even with that being a fact, to the degree that we are so disconnected or not supporting one another, what do we now have to do, especially with all this information we now have? What can we do? So, Carla, your mic is open at 9302. What is your comment or opinion about what we need to do now to make greater unity for our people a reality?
All right. This is Sister Gloria.
Hey, Sister Gloria.
What I have read in a document called Quiet Weapons, Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars.
Mm-hmm.
We have been at war for many, many years, and we didn't even know it because they use silent weapons. And what the silent weapon is in our community is economics.
Mm-hmm.
No one took us aside and said, these are the rules to buying a home, or you don't have to do this, or, you know, just the information. It wasn't there. And they have methodically, for many, many years, from this time to that time, we're going to work on this. From that time to that time, we're going to work on this part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so on, until we've gotten to where we are today. And now, there's quite a few people that are starting to wake up, Caucasians along with black people, because what they can see now is we will all be enslaved under this technology. I read in several articles, if you go to COINTELPRO, 2011. It'll shock you, because they just come out and tell you, this is what we want for you niggers, and this is how we're going to do it. And this is how they've done it. Because I questioned, I never really pondered too much, like, why was I thrown into this program? Why did this happen to me? It was just one thing that I wondered. There was a friend, quote-unquote friend. We've been friends for over 40 years at this point.
Mm-hmm.
She was the one that would call me, oh, I have to pay my bills. You know, I'll be put out by this time. And I'd scramble and help her get her money together. And then when I was thrown into this program, what did it take after 40 years? What could possibly be said to her about me or about the situation? I don't know. But somehow my life was infiltrated with this silent weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So now, that's what I'm seeing. And, yes.
Mm-hmm. I can agree. I really, really can agree. Well, obviously, especially as it applies for today. But let's go back for a minute. Let's look at the 1800s. There were so many black towns, towns that black folks literally built themselves. We're talking about at least 50, that I've been able to research. All right, from Ohio, Oklahoma, Kansas, etc. Now, with that said, these are black folks that had their own everything. So from an economic, so-called economic standpoint, we're talking about our own businesses, our own schools, our own, you name it. So, yes, obviously, especially today, we literally can see that the economic game that has been played on us is real. But we can also see where that wasn't the case. See, something else has happened. Now, that's a factor. Don't get me wrong. I totally agree. That's a definite factor. You know, as we see it right before our eyes today, that's a major thing. But that wasn't always the case. So what else could have happened? It's a very good dialogue and a very good analogy, you know. But again,
something else that could have happened. It's just like if you saved your money up to purchase something, and you worked and you put your money aside, and you, okay, now you have it. And then maybe it's a car you're saving for. And then all of a sudden, you walk out of your house one morning and the car is stripped. No tires, mm-hmm. No windows, no nothing. And I think it just, it strips you also. A piece of you is stripped away.
Mm-hmm.
When they destroyed the town, when they destroyed Gap, Oklahoma, I read the number of grocery stores,
mm-hmm.
the number of limousine companies. You know, I mean, these people were living large and
mm-hmm.
in charge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they made it, because of this quiet war, they made it so we can't recoup.
Mm-hmm.
They made it very difficult for us to recoup, because
mm-hmm.
as part of their project, was to destroy us.
Right.
And that's where, you know, it's like some part of you is just stripped away and you just can't, you know, you reach a point where you say, I can't do it anymore.
Right.
So,
I got
mm-hmm.
you. Okay, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. I'm glad you made that point, because that definitely is a reality as well. I mean, at some point, how much can you really take? At some point, what type of effect is that all going to have? So, yes, I can see that. And that makes a lot of sense. Okay, well, things that make you want to go, All right. All right, family. Well, tonight, as you can tell, we are talking about the seven principles of Kwanzaa. And that's known as the Nguza Saba. And we're going to take we won't take a break just yet. We're going to wait. And we're going to talk more with Sister Amy and Sister Gloria. But somebody needs to stop ruffling your phone, because it's coming through on the air. But let's talk a little more about this concept of unity and what we call Imani. So I think both of you have, again, hit on some very valid points. Once again, what are some of the things we can actually begin to do? Really, realistically, what would both of you suggest some of the things that we can begin to do to have greater unity, to change, to shift this paradigm? And remember, when I'm asking that question, I'm also asking, if you can, or if you've given some thought, what would be the application? For example, we know that we shouldn't do this, or we should do that, or whatever. Okay, we got that part. But we got to now take this to the next level. How do we not do this, or how do we do whatever it is we need to do? What do you think about that?
One of the things I truly know
we don't support each other anymore. We don't make our own clothing. We don't learn how to entertain ourselves. A lot of this has something to do with we must stop integrating with other people and believing that we are as one, we are equal, and it's not to say we are beneath them, but you, a lot of people, our people get it mixed up. They still not, don't understand. It ain't the way things appear to be. They, the Caucasians are used to saying one thing but illustrating another. Prime example, when we went about the situation regarding Trayvon Martin and other black children or adults being killed by white supremacists or a police officer. Well, the officers, just the black officers work with these Caucasians. They, too, don't do nothing. They're worried about a job. So then if you look in, inside that situation with us being in these positions and working on the laws and whatever it may be with these Caucasians, we feel like we are pushed against or backed up in against the wall. Damn if I do, damn if I don't. So what do I do? I don't say anything because I got to worry about feeding my family, keeping my job, and all these things. Well, the solution is that it was did deliberately for us not to unify by working for them so we would learn to keep our mouths shut as a form of control over us that we work for us, for them. So the solution is we got to start rebuilding a nation. And to rebuild a nation, we have to be more friendly with one another. We have to compromise for the greater good, but still be firm and not be those type of people that tell people what they want to hear, but actually lay the truth out and don't put it on them, force it on them, where we'll lose them from being, lose their wanting to be around us because they just couldn't handle it. And an example, I was told by Sister Empress, I was talking to these two sisters who wasn't have a sense of black consciousness within their own life and why it's a valuable tool for us to continue to fight. Well, Empress said, Sister Empress shared something with me, not in front of those sisters, but she told me, she said, you have to have more patience with those sisters. So that may be a factor that we have to have more patience with our people, but keep telling our people the truth and laying out examples and not just let our words be just words, but put actions behind words to lead by example to bring about change. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Okay, Sister Amy, you definitely, again, had some very valid points and very interesting ones, and certainly some things that I am going to look at closer and take into consideration. We're going to bring in another caller. I'm going to keep both of you right there, Sister Gloria, Sister Amy, and caller, you're at 7951. Please feel free to share with us. We're talking about unity, how to make it happen to a greater extent, how to keep it moving, growing, sustaining, and so forth. What do you think we should do or can do or need to look at closer? Caller at 7951. Your mic is open. 7951. Okay. All right. Well, let's see. Okay, I guess we don't have a caller there, but you did press one, so I assume you wanted to get on. Okay, we will switch back then and go back to Sister Amy and Sister Gloria. Okay, so again, what we've been talking about is unity. And, I mean, it's more than a notion. You hear a lot of people talk about, oh, we need to be more unified. We need to come together. And all that sounds real good. But the reality of it is, how? What are going to be some of the things that we do, or what are some of the things that we can do to really make that happen? Now, one of the things that Sister Amy just said is, of course, the concept of nation building. Now, for some, that might seem like a far-fetched notion. Certainly, it's been one that has been done. It's not like it's just something that's just been talked about. We have seen the Honorable Marcus Garvey did it. We've seen the Honorable Elijah Muhammad do it. So it's not like it's so far-fetched. Now, it may not be the perfect nation, or it may not be the nation that one might, you know, feel that they want to be a part of, but the point being, these things were done. So obviously, since it has been done in the past, it is something that needs to be looked at for the future because it was productive. It did help people. So needless to say, this is something that we've got to look at for the future. But now, here we come to another point. With that, how do we bring about the development of a new nation or nations, okay, because we come from diversity just in terms of us as a people. So there's not going to be any one nation. I don't foresee that happening anytime in the near future. Therefore, we need to see and understand and know that there will be, there are presently a variety of nations. So why not there be a variety here in the U.S., but still that can be connected. So we're going to talk more about a lot of that as we proceed. I want to go back to Sister Gloria for a moment. Sister Gloria, again, you brought out some very, very good points as well. And I want to ask now, Sister Amy talked about the fact that we're not making our own, for example, clothing. All right. Now, these are fundamental things, and one of the big problems that had been with African people here in the U.S. is the idea of productivity in terms of actually manufacturing, actually producing things. Realistically, sister, I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you have thought of something, what do you feel that we could make or we could be a manufacturer of as a people? If we want to be
number one,
go ahead.
We can go back to farming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can go back to farming, and so we can, number one, start feeding our own, because there's some stuff that's coming down the road that it's not for humans. It's for transhuman people, transhumanism, and this has been social engineering at its finest. A television show. Okay, we watch TV, and Nat King Cole will come on, and everybody in the house would run to the television to admire Nat King Cole on white TV. And it was black and white then, but now we have this venue, we're there, but we're not willing to tell our own story. You know, I'd love Madea, don't get me wrong, but there should be a point. Madea has enough power to show us, some of us, you know, wake us up. Come on and wake us up mentally. Challenge us. These people are in positions to do that. The Oprah Winfrey, she, you know, was appalled because she couldn't buy a $35,000 purse. $35,000, all my little problems would be solved. But, you know, we don't use our venues to empower each other. Thank you for listening.
Well, the thing is, Sister Gloria, in our reality, the system that this government, that this country prescribes to is as such that is what it is. So that's why I think it's important that we understand that, because it can only be and do what it actually is. So I think for us to think that, well, okay, like you say, well, Oprah, I mean, Oprah is a part of the system, needless to say. I mean, it's very obvious. Therefore, her actions are going to depict what the system represents. Now, should we expect anything other than that from her? I'll be honest and say no. Why? Because you're either for the system or against it. That's just the reality. Now, there used to be where people could, like, straddle the fence and kind of act like, well, okay, I'm either for the system or not for the system, and they could kind of straddle the fence and some way I'm for it, some way I'm against it. Or blah, blah, blah. Well, see, nowadays, the lines are being drawn in the sand, and so what's happening, people are having to make some actual decisions. And, of course, most are making the decision, like the Jay-Z and Beyonce and all these other people, and Rihanna or whoever else. For the most part, the people who are in certain types of positions, they have pretty much opt to be a part of the system. And when I say be a part of the system, don't get me wrong, we're all a part of the system. Okay, by virtue of the fact that we're here. So we're also, let's not get confused, we're all a part of the system. But, are we really consciously working to uphold it or to help it to continue? See, now that's when it becomes a different scenario. So, yes, we are a part of the system, but do we do things intentionally in the effort of resistance? Absolutely. And therefore, there is some minute difference in how we're operating, because we're not, shall we say, willingly participating or giving in or just giving it to them like that. You see, that's the difference, whereas you have so many who they are not trying to upset any apple cart whatsoever. See, these are the little distinct kinds of things that we've got to begin to pay closer attention to and take note of, because these are the things that's going to ultimately determine who it is that is really trying to make things better for us as a people. So just because an entity might donate X amount of dollars to something, if that something is not about really trying to help our people to be free, then in reality they're only contributing towards the sustainment and the maintenance of the system. Okay? So
yeah,
these are some of the things,
that,
again, family, that we've got to begin to think of. Go ahead, Sister Glory.
Well, each of us is, you know, we're waiting for, and as Dr. Short was on, I like when he uses the term black necks.
Yeah.
We continue to look to black necks to tell us which direction to take. Or I listened to this 100.3, the old school station, and on Sunday morning. And I keep trying to get Al Sharpton on the phone, but I can't do it. And, you know, he was so in place for Trayvon Martin. Everything went off without a hitch. The march, the parade, the hoodies, the cans of this, the food, da-da-da.
Right.
So, and we hold our breath and wait for the next episode. that mm-hmm. Al Sharpton can run up there and say our black agenda. I want, what is it?
Mm-hmm.
I just want to know what it is. And how do you get on and, you know, decide what the black agenda is?
Let me make a correction. And the correction is rather than we listen to these people, I think there needs to be a correction in saying there is a segment of black people that listen to these people. Okay? And what we have to begin to do, right, we have to begin to really differentiate. It's just that serious now. And those of us who are taking the position not to buy into that, we have to make certain that it's clear that we denounce it, we do not support it, and so forth and so on. Because, unfortunately, it has come to that point. We've got to differentiate and identify ourselves and let them identify themselves. Okay, maybe you stay right there. We're going to go back to, we have a caller at, I think it might be the same caller, hopefully. Maybe something was wrong with your phone at 7951. We're going to open up your mic again, and hopefully this time we're able to hear you. 7951, your mic is open. You have a comment for us or something you'd like to share with us on the issue or topic of unity, Emoja. Okay. I'm not going to do that again. I made an attempt to bring you in. I don't know if it's something wrong with your phone or what, but 7951, your mic is again open. So for the last time, do you have a comment?
Yes.
Okay.
You're not Muhammad.
Excuse me?
Yes, can you hear me? This is you're not Muhammad.
Oh, yes, sister. How are you? We've been trying to hear you.
I apologize. I'm not sure what's going on with my phone. But anyway, I've been on since about 7:02, and I really had some things I wanted to say, but I don't want to backtrack. But first of all, congratulations on the new addition to our family.
Oh,
and,
thank
but I
you.
Do have some comments. So where are we now? Where are we now? I wanted to, there's some comments I wanted to make about, you had asked the question, excellent question, what's happened to us? Where
mm-hmm.
are we?
Mm-hmm.
And in respect for Kwanzaa, and Ujoma and Imani, actually, which is one of the seven basic values of African culture. And I don't know what I'm going to do this year. But I definitely have some comments I wanted to make, and I really appreciate the comments that you made, also Gloria and Sister Amy. They're excellent points. But if it's okay for me to go ahead now, or should I wait?
Absolutely. But I think, do you by any chance have your phone on and your computer?
Yes.
Okay, there's feedback coming in.
Oh, okay. Oh, I can turn it off.
So what you need to do is turn your computer volume down because all the feedback is coming back, and it's like an echo.
It must have been from the tape I was listening to earlier. Well, I can just – let me see, do this now and see if you can hear me. I'm going to turn it down right now.
Okay.
All the way down. Okay. Can you hear echo now? Let me just turn it off.
Yep, I did. Every time I hear myself speak, then it says the same thing over again because it's a feedback. So you have to actually turn your volume down from the computer.
Okay, I did that. So I'm turning it off now.
Okay, great.
I don't need it on. I just had it on. Okay. And how's everyone
doing?
Okay,
now we can hear you.
Okay. Okay, now. The points that were made were excellent in response to your question, what's happening, why aren't we coming together in unity. And it's not
mm-hmm.
that we're not trying to come together in unity. And as you spoke of, you said you'd research, you'd come up with at least 50 black
mm-hmm.
towns and cities. And basically the thing is that even though they wait till we build something, if they can't come and take it over, then they'll just destroy it. And actually,
mm-hmm.
According to my research, at least one city was actually bombed. They have to drop
mm-hmm.
bomb, but there's
mm-hmm.
always an excuse for them to come in and tear down something. And normally
right.
if somebody cried rape or somebody looked at a white woman or whatever it was, just some frivolous
mm-hmm.
reason. So in order for us to do what we did in at least 50 black cities and towns, we had to have a tremendous amount of unity. And I think
mm-hmm.
we came and congregated after slavery. We did come together in unity, but there are many things, even though we didn't get the 40 acres and the mule, what we did do, what we did come together and produce, we actually came together in unity and basically solidified what we had and built structures that we needed to sustain, to maintain ourselves as a people. Now, once we came from the South here, they call the Great Migration, and it wasn't just to find work and jobs. It was to escape all the horrible things they were doing to our people, all that lynching, which really wasn't even against the law to do that to us in the years past. We came to the area, and my family came from the South to many different areas. My mother and father came to San Francisco. And then we had some family members went to nearby areas and cities, Chicago, Florida, all over the country. But we were here in San Francisco, and we had wonderful businesses set up, including structures, and we were based around our faith, our religions, our family were Christians. And we had our churches, we had our financial institutions, we had businesses, we had our own stores.
Right.
And we had everything. We had our own fruits. We had people who come by from our black farmers and bring our fresh fruits to our homes. We had everything that we needed. But basically when gentrification came, what gentrification actually did was gentrify. It didn't like gentrify us into open areas and neighborhoods. We could all come in and bring our community stores and business. We had, our businesses shut down for the most part. We didn't have that community. We just scattered. Okay? And then whenever we come together, like in unincorporated areas and some of the urban areas where we have probably in many areas and cities, the urban areas, unincorporated areas, basically is set up that we build, but then they come right behind us and they'll do a takeover, and they use their own people to do it. These are politicians. I think someone mentioned that politicians tonight on the call, politicians do things to come in and disrupt. They set up their own programs that are identical to us, and they'll get the funding, and then we don't have anything. Okay, so
right.
we keep working, but we don't have any money. So basically, and I also think Gloria was talking about the economics. We don't have an economic floor. Everybody else uses it. They even this government made agreements, trade agreements, with other countries, including Korea, China, Taiwan, which is part of China, and other countries, basically to supply us our needs. They come in and even took over our beauty supply business and other business as well. They just take them over. And it's all set up, and it's the same thing. It has to be some common goal or plan for it to be happening all over the country, and even doing it in Africa. Okay, so basically, looking at gentrification, you're looking at the divide and conquer, and the reason for divide and conquer is to be able to take over what you have. So we have to look at this. Has all been well documented. I've documented enough over the past 15 years in this Bay Area myself. So we know the structure.
Right.
We know what they're doing. We need to come together and work at this. I think you're on the right point. Come together and look at the causes and how it works, and then we can work from that perspective on how to put together another process to do the opposite of what they're doing, basically disrupt them. And there's a way you can disrupt them, okay? There's certain steps to the process, and each step has a name. You can put yourself right offline, and basically after that, the first step, they're in the door. It's called the foot in the door. Then you stop them at the second step. But the community has to be behind you and backing you, and you have to have these so-called Negro leaders that are in place there. Basically, they have to be more
successful. Sister Jeanette, I love your analogy. I love you. I thank you so much for those words. Now, I'm going to add a little spin to this because that's what I do.
Okay.
I do things to stimulate and motivate thought. Okay, but trust me, I love your analogy. But now, here comes the side rail for this, and it's this. Now, all that you just said, I totally agree. You're absolutely on point, and as I said, I love it. But check this out. What you just said has been said for many, many years now, okay? That analogy has been one that we have been talking about, that I know I heard coming up, and certainly prior to that. So now, obviously, this is something that our people have known for a while. Now let's look at this. Japan had a bomb. I mean, a nuclear atom bomb dropped on it. We're talking about the destruction of land, water, air, you name it. The people had diseases from radiation and so forth and so on, okay? Now, the enemy manipulated the economy, so-called economy, and I'm going to go back to that word at another time, but for the sake of conversation, I'm going to say economy. And we're still getting some feedback, so I'm not sure what's going on. You still might be near your computer, and your phone is picking up the
my computer's off. My computer's off.
Oh, wow, this is funny. Okay, because we're definitely hearing feedback. But anyway, we're going to continue. The bottom line is that the Japanese people, and I'm just putting the facts on the table, and the reason is this. I strongly believe that our women are now one of our best-kept secrets. And what I mean by that is I believe that what has been bestowed upon us as women is a weapon. Talked about weapons of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, I believe that our women have been given a weapon of such greatness. I'm not going to call it mass destruction, but certainly it's going to set some stuff straight. Hence, to deal with some of the real problems and issues in such a way to make some headway, because the analogy that you gave, again, on point, excellent. And we have continuously said, this is what they do, this is what they have done. They, of course, did bomb Black Wall Street. There were other towns that they did destroy. There were some that they didn't destroy. We do play each other, blah, blah, blah. That, we've been saying that. So now, how can a country like Japan be, again, has a nuclear atom bomb dropped on it, the land is filled with radiation, the people have disease and everything else, the economy, they're put into a precarious situation with that. How come now they're one of the powers in the world financially? See, there's an analogy here that's not matching. Because if we say we are the original people, and we do, and we should, and they say that all these other people came from us, something's wrong with the picture.
Mm-hmm. It is. Now, I did some research. I agree with you. Something is wrong. Something is wrong with the picture.
Right, especially if we keep saying this is what they're doing, this is what they're not letting us do, wait a minute. No, something's not cool here with that. I mean, it's not cool, obviously, because we're suffering from it, but the analogy, and again, I truly believe, and as we proceed in developing our movement, I'm going to demonstrate point even further, and it's this. You know, every period or every so often in time, you can see some manifestation of something that is not necessarily the norm, but something that certainly helps to make a difference.
Right.
You see, be it a civil rights movement, and I know people have problems with that, but there were some things that did come out of that that were helpful. And I'm just saying, every period in time that you can see something is happening. Well, I think that no period in time is going to be our women at the helm of it. Now that's a very dangerous statement to make. As I'm
I don't
sure
think so.
All
I don't
you
think it's dangerous. I think you're very correct. I think you're very accurate. I don't think it's dangerous. In fact, Sister Amy and I was talking a little bit. Was that the day we were talking about the same subject, Sister Amy, on the same subject, the rise of women, particularly Black women, indigenous women?
Mm-hmm.
Amy, you there? Are you there? Oh, let me take a break.
yeah, I think
you have the same problem I had.
Yeah, she's still on. I have to get back to the actual phone, but I think she's still listening.
I agree.
I'm just so excited about just knowing what we're going to do as the original women at the helm of things. So
that's
very
right.
Exciting, and that gave me some power. I'm over here just meditating and just saying that, oh, I can't wait.
I know that's right. And see, that's the beautiful thing, because a lot of our women have been waiting. You know, in fact, one of the sayings or slogans or whatever you want to call it that we've adopted is, we're the ones that we've been waiting for.
Well, I agree with that. I agree with that 100%.
That's right.
Yes, ma'am.
So we don't need to keep looking for the Savior or anything like that. We're the ones that we've been waiting for.
I agree.
Uh-huh. So again, I think as we proceed, we have to begin to assert that no longer do we take the behind-the-scenes kind of position. And while we understand and understand what has happened, by us taking our rightful places, that's going to help dismantle some of the nonsense. So these are some of the things that we foresee happening in the very near future, my sister. The fact of the matter is, again, when you look at the Japanese people, and it's not to say, again, no one, as far as I'm concerned, no one has suffered or has had the atrocities inflicted upon them as we have as a people. So don't get me wrong, I'm not suggesting that whatsoever. What I am saying is, if a group of people can have a nuclear bomb dropped on them, can have their water poisoned, can have their soil poisoned, can have radiation, whatever diseases, et cetera, and then within 50 to 60 years become one of the top entities in the world, there's no way you're going to tell me in this day and age that we cannot, should not, and will not be moving forward now. No way. It's not acceptable.
I agree.
Okay? And so I'm just saying that to say that, again, you are on point in all that you said, my sister, and I appreciate all of that, what you said, because we have to teach, we have to train, we have to put out the information so that people, our people, can make proper assessments and evaluations, you know, based on that information. And with that, we go to the next step of planning the strategy to address these issues and to do it head on and to do it relentlessly.
Okay, so what would be the first step?
Sister Amy just said something. Here's my proposal, and in the very near future, when we finish some of our work and putting together the APAC piece, when it comes to developing our sisterhood, one of the things that we're going to be proposing and taking a poll on is a couple of garments that we can begin to manufacture that the women, our women, as a sisterhood. Sister Amy said, and also Sister Gloria, they talked about food, agriculture. Now, as we know, the black farmers, for the most part, have been totally mistreated, hoodwinked, and everything when it comes to that agriculture thing. So it's more than that than a notion. So I'm going to get back to that later. But for me, one of the more immediate, which still is on point, because we need to look at food, shelter, clothing. Those are the three essentials that most, you know, as a people focus on. So I'm suggesting again, and just so future dialogue on this day of unity, on this day of merger, we're going to have some dialogue that says to our sisters, those sisters who want to really move forward, the question is going to be, what are the couple of garments we feel we can manufacture as women? Just identify what they are. And because we know of many sisters that sew, let's create a sewing collective.
Empress, you know I went to fashion school, and that is my profession as an artist, as a fashion designer, to draw garments and things like that. So right
Wow.
now I'm getting ready to have this African brother who've been soaring for 40 years to teach me and give me one-on-one classes, because he is like up the street. And I stay in an area where everything is around me, all the businesses. So I already spoke to him, but I'm going to go speak to him tomorrow because he wasn't in his shop. And I'm going to ask him to give me one-on-one construction classes. And he said he learned from scratch. He was taught from hand sewing and making things. And he just, and when you go in his shop, he has all of the African brothers and sisters, like Fitzgerald and other people, are people, our history on his wall. So the brother is conscious of what's going on. And I want to get with him. And Sister Jeanette can tell you that inside our study group, two sewing machines, the actual ones that the commercial sewing machines is in the mosque that's been donated to us in our study group. So that's one of the criteria of the Muslim have to learn how to sew and construct and housekeep and child rear and be, you know, a mother of the family and take care of the husband and things like that. But overall, me, I went to art school, and I one day I'm going to draw some garments and make sure you get them in the mail. But another thing that I'm concerned about, and I talked to Sister Gloria, she had an organization called Girl Talk, and I want to reach out with Sister Gloria to our young mothers that probably teenage mothers or somewhere up in there just having the babies and have no education and guidance. And I don't mean when I say go to college and go to school, I mean education on the from us, our heritage, and to know what it is we need to do to assist them and help them as the villagers of the tribe to reach out to these sisters. And don't be saying, oh, she's look at them, they just ain't doing nothing but having babies. That's not what we're supposed to do. We got to reach out to them because their babies is our future. So we got to start reaching out to the young mothers that the system has targeted and designated them just to be raising the children up on welfare so they can use them, keep them in poverty and enslave them. Them are the mothers we got to reach out to. The ones with 3 and 4 little ones that's on welfare and living in low housing and or Section 8 that fit this so-called description for them to breed and serve for the Caucasian race. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Well, again, just some of the work that the Man Woman Movement has been doing and has been putting together for these past years, we too have something that we call Girl Talk that we go into the community here in Philadelphia and hold throughout the community on a citywide level during different periods throughout the year. But it falls under our group called Little Sisters. And with that, you know, we have training for the Little Sisters group. Now, going back to what you were saying in terms of skill of showing and taking care of the home, that is a fundamental thing. But when I was talking about a sewing collective, that's really more about business. Of course, the sister can use that for the maintenance of her home, needless to say. But in this day and age, what we're looking at is how we can pull those skills together and become manufacturers. See, these are the dots that have to now be connected. It has to be in such a way in fighting this war that we can multitask. And the multitask, and we can hit several targets at one time. So essentially, MWM already began to put in place the Million Woman Movement media marketing, manufacturing, and merchandising components. And with those components, each one of those areas has specific operations, as it suggests. Now, one of the first manufacturing things in terms of the soul, because there's two components. One is publication, and then the other is, as we said, the manufacturing is of garments. And so I was asking the three of you and anyone else that's listening about suggestions, what could be realistically, and we're talking about from a usage standpoint, meaning things that our folks utilize in terms of garment, what do you think we might be able to look at mass producing? See, because until we're able to begin to provide alternatives to our people in certain areas, then the system and the enemy will continue to do what it does to us. So, again, you know, this is not something that needs to be answered right now, but these are some things we need to think about for the future, and that is to begin to produce a line of garments. And I'm saying if the women do it, that thing is going to hit like you can't even believe. Now, we already have one that we're going to introduce very, very soon, and that is we're getting ready to produce a line of undergarments for women and girls coming from the movement. Why? Because
it's got to
be just a way of something. So why shouldn't we be producing it?
Right.
Surprise, another thing.
I discovered, and I'm looking around the sisters, we have a few, like, fashion trends. We have the sisters that love to look good on Sunday, and they will go spend all this money with other people to look good. So we got sisters that wear their nice two-piece garments with a hat. We got that as an open market for our people. Then we got people that want to, the modest dresses. And then you have the dressing where we can reconstruct the fashion for the young girls where it could be fashionable, but it has some form of a modest look instead of them, these garments, where it makes, devalues them and makes them look like they're showing skin. So those are the three target areas of reconstruction that is needed. The church, the sisters that go to church, the modest sisters, and the reconstruction of these. I want to say those garments that just make God divide your sisters. So those are the three areas that I hear that I can see potential, because I've been speaking to some sisters, and they told me if I knew how to sew, although I know how to draw the garments and do all those things, I'm going to art school. I'm working on the construction, because, sister, being honest with you, I didn't learn how to construct the sewing process because I became targeted, and that's what stopped that. But for us, the ideas and the drawings of the garments, I have that down pat. So now that's where I am wanting to construct. And then I even had an idea where I had made a dialogue with a pawn shop. I wanted to construct diamonds and jewels, put real jewels in a garment I designed, and the jeweler laid the pawns in them so it can be a high-end fashion. Where I can make money to give to my people. Well, I got targeted, and I had a 501c3, and I am an inventor of a safe sex prophylactic garment that reduces HIV. So all of that, as Sister Janot said, that they will use their tools to try to tear you down. So I'm now looking at my opportunity, now that you said about the fashion, and I'm going to talk to his brother. I can carry on my business now after knowing that I can do business with my people.
Absolutely.
Thank you for allowing me.
Absolutely. Well, sisters, this has been a dynamite, incredible dialogue on the Day of Umoja. I think we have, again, demonstrated the concept and certainly the principle, because we're not only talking about unity, we're talking about how to become more unified. And so we're going to continue this dialogue in the very near future. As we get into the so-called 2014, there's a lot of things that's going to be unveiled and revealed. And so I'm going to be sharing some very powerful information with all of you very, very soon. Before we go, because we're going to close this session out in just a few minutes, and we're going to close out with something on Kwanzaa, we want to remind everyone that on January 1st, Dr. Randy Short will be coming to Philadelphia for the Day of Faith, the Day of Imani. And we want to also remind all of you that on the 27th, which is tomorrow, we will do probably, I'm almost sure we're going to do another special edition. I'm not sure of the time, though, because we are looking at possibly doing a, tomorrow is Kujichagulia. I don't know why I've always loved saying Kujichagulia, but more importantly, I love the principle, the concept, and that is, of course, self-determination, okay? So we got to talk about self-determination tomorrow. So we're going to continue this dialogue because it goes in hand with, of course, Kujichagulia, self-determination. But we want to remind all of your friends. Yes.
Yes. Do your grandbaby have an African descended name?
Actually, my daughter is utilizing her last name from her father, and it is Hakeem. The baby's name is Journey Hakeem. Yeah. And you know, it's so funny. It's really interesting. I can't wait to see your picture of her because it's like, you know, you can. It's like she speaks it, like she says, "We're on a journey." You know, it's so interesting. But these are the times that we are in, and so she is here to make certain that the journey is fulfilled. So her name is Journey.
Oh, wonderful. And also, that's wonderful. That's a wonderful name. I like the name.
Yeah,
also,
what she came up with, that, you know, she was the one that said it, so it is what it is. But that happened this
morning.
What time
is that tomorrow?
Excuse me?
What time is that call tomorrow? We have a call tomorrow?
Yes.
Is this a meeting?
Exactly yet of the timing because as you can probably imagine some things have kind of changed for me in the past couple of days, but we definitely will have one tomorrow. It will probably be a little earlier though than our regular 10:30 time. So we'll be posted. I'll definitely let Sister Amy know and she can send out the text and let everyone know. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Good thanks. All right, family, we're going to close out this segment of New Day, and we thank all of you for tuning in. We're going to continue this dialogue also because there's a lot that, as you probably can tell, we have begun. And so we wish you all a happy Kwanzaa, Borigani. Of course, the response is Umoja for the day, unity. We're going to strive even more so to exhibit and to not only demonstrate unity, but to really have it to live and thrive. So again, family, we thank all of you, and we're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you, and that, of course, is in the spirit of Ma'adenhotep. But remember, there can be no real peace, meaning Hotep, until there is truly Ma'at, meaning justice. We must have justice. We will have justice. We cannot rest until there is justice for us, for our people, for our ancestors. All of you again, and I look forward to talking with you tomorrow.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
You're so very welcome. Okay. And we're going to leave you. all with Kwanzaa for tonight. And again, we will be black tomorrow. All right.
The Ngutu Saba, Moja, Kutu Chagulia, self-determination, Ujima, collective work and responsibility, Ujama, cooperative economics, Pia, purpose, Kuruma, creativity, Imani, faith. Matunda ya kwanza, first fruit of the harvest, i.e.